Hey everyone, if you make whiskey with a base of corn, please lend me your ears for a second. The American Craft Spirits Association is once again teaming up with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and related corn grower associations in another 20 states for the fourth biennial Heartland Whiskey Competition, which celebrates the cream of the crop, corn, the key ingredient for eligible entries into this competition. To learn more and to register for the Heartland Whiskey Competition, visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org. Thanks.
The one that really got me going, where I was like, yes, I can do this, I made an Amaro. It was lovingly called Swamp Water. Because and while it tasted good, it was this greenish brown cloudy looking thing, and I thought, well, I can figure that out, I can work around that. I got the flavors in the right direction, and so yeah, that was kind of what got me to say I can do this.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by Jamie Hunt of Fast Penny Spirits, a Seattle-based company that makes Amaro. In this episode, Jamie discusses her love of Amaro and how her former experience as a VP of digital strategy helped her launch Fast Penny during the pandemic. She also shares details about the company's Pretty Penny giveback program and becoming a certified B Corporation. Jamie says she fell in love with Amaro on a trip to Italy during her 20s.
After dinner, they served me this beautiful digestivo, and I was kind of hooked, and I started looking for other digestivos, other Amari, throughout my travels, and yeah, I've been a fan ever since.
And that was, you know, that was... I guess talk about your first thoughts on it, you know, when it first came out to the table and you took that first sip. How many sips before you were hooked?
I would say it was probably three or four. The first sip is a little surprising because you get that bitterness in there. But yeah, I think by the third or fourth sip, it starts to taste, you start to taste all the botanicals and such. And that was really fun.
And then you keep traveling over the years, and do you essentially start collecting Amari?
I do. Yeah. So whenever I go to Italy, I go and I try to find a new Amaro or maybe a Reserva from a brand that we all know, or many of us know, like a Broglio or a Verna Reserva or something like that. I collect them, but I also drink them. So they don't last a whole lot long. They don't last very long at my house. So.
Gotcha. But, and along the way, you're trying to like turn on friends to Amaro, right?
Yeah, I serve it at the house after dinner. I would either serve Amaro or I might serve a port or something like that. I really enjoy the after dinner drink. I think it's pretty fun. Usually I'm not done socializing, so that's a good way to extend the night.
Yeah. And I guess like throughout the years are you know, the friends that you're sharing that with, how many of them are already Amaro drinkers, or how many people are you kind of introducing Amaro to for the first time, and what's that experience like?
Most people I introduced Amaro to, a lot of people haven't had it here in the US. I think a lot more have now, especially in cocktails. But usually the first experience, I try to go with an Amaro that's a little easier, a little more approachable to drink first. And then if they are Amaro fans or they've grown to be Amaro fans, then we could start looking at the more bitter versions as well.
Okay. And so all along the way, and this is all obviously before you've started Fast Penny, you're really into wine, right? And And I think you mentioned the last time we spoke that you had gotten, you know, like your Somm pin. So like you're on this path to Fast Penny without knowing it, but you're also, you know, you're dabbling in these other areas. So what I guess, how did those things help you kind of come to the conclusion that, hey, this is what I want to do?
Yeah. So, that's true. I do love wine. I do love craft cocktails and I love food. So I also took like a boot camp at the CIA in Napa for fun, which is great. But yeah, I think it led me to it. I mean, I have a family that's made liqueurs and wine for generations. And just knowing like one of my love languages is making food and tasty beverage for friends and family. It just, when I was looking at doing something a little bit different or a lot different than what I was currently doing, and something I was passionate about, Amaro just seemed to be the thing that had a place in the marketplace. There wasn't a lot of Amaro, American-made Amaro at the time, that was done in more of that Italian, more complex style.
And you would go out to like to bars and like, you know, sample American made Amaro, right? What was kind of your experience like with that?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I didn't really realize that there was American made Amaro until probably 5 or 6 years ago. I had only been drinking mostly the Italian Amari, and I had a little bit of French and a little bit of German and Hungarian in the past as well. But yeah, I think when I was on my road to thinking, I want to start a business, I want to do something that gives back, I want to do something I'm passionate about, when I was drinking an after dinner Amaro at a local bar, it just kind of struck me. And I asked the bartender if there was any American made Amaro, and he said yes, and he poured me a couple. And I think they were good, but they weren't the style that I really fell in love with. And so that's where I started researching the market. I started playing around with recipes, researching the history and so forth. And that's what kind of got me hooked.
What was that? Was like realizing that there were other people out there doing it. And I think this is what you're saying, but I want to make sure I'm not misrepresenting it. Learning that there were people out there making it is sort of what finally made you think, oh, I can do this. Like if somebody else can do this, I can do it, and I can probably do it better.
I don't know if it was so much that. I think it just kind of struck, I don't know, something in me that night. It put a seed in my head about doing this. I do think it helped that I saw that there was American made Amaro. I do think that helps, but I don't think that drove me to do it.
Okay.
So
you start thinking about it. And along the way, like you're a vice president of like digital strategy, right? And you're a consultant. Yeah. And so you're I guess kind of planning for, like, it's kind of a side hustle at the time to plan on it, right? So when did the actual, like, I guess when would you say you really started like, okay, this is gonna happen, and started like doing the real groundwork to start a distillery?
So August of 2017, so the experience I was talking about earlier at the bar tasting the American made Amaro was in the spring of 2017. So it took me roughly, I don't know, 4 or 5 months of researching and playing around with really simple recipes to get me to a place where I was like, I'm going to start this business, and I'm going to start in earnest on creating a recipe. And so I started that in August of 2017, and then just started working on the recipes, and then later brought in a partner to help me launch it. But it took me about 2.5 years to create the recipe. So it was It was a long time. It's not easy. Amaro is a very complex drink, and so to be able to balance it and get it right takes some time.
What were those first batches like?
So the one that really got me going, where I was like, yes, I can do this. I made an Amaro. It was lovingly called Swamp Water. Because and while it tasted good, it was this greenish brown cloudy looking thing. And I thought, well, I can figure that out. I can work around that. I got the flavors in the right direction. And so yeah, that was kind of what got me to say I can do this. Towards the end of my recipe formulation, though, I did hire a food scientist to help me figure out a way to naturally get rid of some of that cloudiness. And the cloudiness is from all the essential oils that come out of the botanicals. The oils, once you smith down your product, the oils come out of solution. It's called louching. And I needed to figure out a way to process the Amaro to get rid of that, to make it clearer. And so I got some help, and I changed the way I produced it, and lo and behold, I have a clear liquid.
Yeah, so no green anymore, huh?
No green, no brown, at least the cloudy, gross-looking kind. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny that you would think of, like, I've got this swamp water, and I know I can, like, this is, I can do this, I can figure that out. Yeah,
I love the challenge.
yeah. All right, so you've figured out the recipe, and then at what point, I guess, was it that you had settled on July of 20, you know, ominously July of 2020 as a launch? How far before the pandemic reared its ugly head had that been your launch date?
Well, I knew I wanted to launch when I was looking at where the trials were. I knew I could launch in 2020. And I was getting close on all the recipe details by the end of 19. And so I was just kind of on a path to launch. And so I figured out the final alcohol percentage and sugar percentage, probably January, February, put in the recipe into the TTB for approval, had to send my stuff to an FDA approved lab as well. So finally got that approval in the spring, like March-ish timeframe, and then set the launch date based on how long it would take me to make my first batches. So that launch date was July of 2020. The wheels were already in motion. And so you kind of just have to go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of some of the other folks that I've talked to that have started up, you know, in that time frame. That's kind of the, like, you just have to keep going. Like, there's no stopping.
Yeah.
And so how much did it affect your initial launch plan? How much did the pandemic affect it?
It turned it on its head totally. Normally you launch your new liquor brand through restaurants and bars, and you get to have a launch party and all that fun stuff. And for us, we didn't really have that avenue available. The restaurants and bars that were still open were really just trying to go through back stock. They weren't looking for new products. So it was very hard to get our product into there. We also had to go from thinking we were going to be distributed to self-distributing in Washington State. And luckily we were able to do that, but it definitely changed things for us. And with my background in digital from many years before, I was used to doing both B2B and business to business and business to consumer style of marketing and sales and so forth. And so I we put up a e-commerce site right away. I got on with FedEx and UPS and got approved as an alcohol shipper. So I got all that together before we launched. So it was a huge shift in what we were going to do. That was not in the plan at all. We also opened our shipping ramp for curbside pickup and then later tastings to make it more enjoyable. We put up tents because we're in Seattle and it rains a lot here. And so, yeah, we just started moving down that path. And just this last February, we were able to finally cover the deck entirely, which is great. So now it's a really cool space to come and sip Amaro and taste Amaro based cocktails and so forth. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. I guess I'm curious, kind of going back to that first year, how off were the realities versus, you know, your projections of that first year because of the pandemic?
Yeah, well, quite a bit, but fortunately we forecast what we thought we could do based on the market conditions. And so we did pretty well our first year considering all of that. It wasn't what we had initially planned, but like 80% of our business was direct to consumer. So our community really helped us kind of get through that first year. We did a lot of stuff with other small businesses. You know, people didn't have a restaurant to go to necessarily. We had this outdoor space. And so we'd just throw up a tent and we'd have different folks pop up and make food. And we gave them a place without charging. And, you know, we kind of shared in each other's customers and created some fun experiences for everyone.
I would think for like a new brand too, that'd be a good way to kind of like piggyback on, you know, other companies, and that would help get the word out a lot about what you were doing.
Yeah, definitely. It helped a lot. And it was mutually beneficial because we started growing a following as well. And so we were able to kind of help our pop-up partners with some of our customers. So,
yeah. I'm curious to know when exactly the Pretty Penny Give Back program started, and if you could just kind of talk a little bit about that and how it works.
Yeah. So when I built out, actually, even before I started the company, I knew I was doing a give back. I also knew I wanted to be a B Corp. And so as I built out the business model and business plan, I incorporated those factors into it. And as I learned more, I modified things in the business. So for instance, the Pretty Penny program is a 3% bottle sales give back to nonprofits who empower women identifying business leaders, our community, and the hospitality industry. And I had that built in from day one. So from the first bottles we sold, we've been giving back to nonprofits. So
it's just
important piece.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing. How do you go about, you know, picking which nonprofits you're going to partner with?
Well, we make sure, so we do a lot of give back that's not necessarily our quarterly give back, which is a Pretty Penny program. And so when we're looking at Pretty Penny partners, we're looking for nonprofits that align with our mission, which is what I just stated, to empower women identifying business leaders, the community, and their hospitality industry. So we look at that and we look at the different factors, see who they're helping, and then have a conversation to make sure that it's the right fit. And now we're starting to work with some, instead of always finding new ones, which is what we were doing at first, we're starting to work with some that we already had worked with, which is really fun, and trying to build those relationships into a longer term kind of partnership.
Awesome. Yeah. And on the B Corp status, how hard was that to attain?
Boy, it is really challenging. It's like getting an organic certification for like a farm or something. So the B Corp status took us 2 years. to get everything together, to get reviewed and get approved. In qualifying, you know, you take a B impact assessment. And so I took that right away when I was starting the business. And so I kind of knew the things that I needed to put in place in order to get there. And being a small business, there's less things that you can put in place than being larger. I just started building it into our business model from the very beginning. And to qualify, you need 80 points, and we ended up with 99.7. So I was pretty happy about that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that then you, in order to retain your B Corp status, you have to requalify or recertify every 3 years.
Gotcha. Well, and do you feel like that's a thing that, I don't know, in talking with consumers that it matters to them, and that are people coming seeking you out because of it?
I think there's a lot of education yet to be done around what a B Corp is. So it's, you know, putting people in and planet before profits. I think people are seeking us out because of it, but I think a lot of people don't know what it is. And once we describe it, then people get really excited about it. But like the other companies that people can refer to are like Patagonia, Warby Parker, Ben and Jerry's, that are more well known, that are B Corps. And it's really like, you, when you become a B Corp, you put it into your legal operating agreement that you will look at every decision and think about, you know, whether it makes sense from a sustainability standpoint, community standpoint, employee standpoint. So it's not just about making money, it's for profits being a force for good.
Yeah. I'm realizing that, you know, we've talked a lot about your business, and we talked a little bit about your, you know, your early trials with your Amaro, but we haven't specifically chatted yet about the products that you have available. Walk me through the, you know, I think it's two products that are available right now. Kind of tell me about each one of them and what makes them special.
Yeah, we have two main products. We have an Americano Bianca, which is a white Amaro, which is very rare in the marketplace. It's beautiful. It's has a little bit of candied lemon flavors, very floral. The saffron comes through, and the saffron's grown here in Washington State, which is really fun. And it's wonderful sip neat, and it's also lovely in cocktail. So on our tasting deck, we always have a white Negroni that we make with it. We spritz with it. We do, right now we're doing hot toddies with it because it's cold here. Sure. We have that one. And we also have a digestivo called our Americano Rosa. And that really picks up the notes of black truffle, which is foraged here in the Pacific Northwest by dogs. A little Mexican spice. We get organic cocoa nibs from a local chocolatier, Theo's, in Seattle. And then also Rainier Cherry and Cascara. So it's richer, earthier. It's also really delicious sip neat. It's the one I go to after dinner most of the time. And then it's lovely in cocktails too. So the Black Manhattan's always on our cocktail list at the tasting deck. It's a crowd favorite. But it can do so many other things in tropical. We do spritz with it, but we love to make a savory spritz where we put in green olives. It's quite tasty. So we do other collaborations. So love to collaborate. We have some limited releases we've done. So we've worked with DeLille Winery here in Washington State and aged our Bianca in Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc barrels. We took our Americano and put them in their Cab Sauv barrels. So those are pretty fun. And then we work with Westland Whiskey, and we aged our Americano in their peated barrels for 9 months. And that is quite delicious. And then we haven't released it yet, but we aged in their single malt barrels too. And that is lovely as well.
That sounds super fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you anticipate having, you know, are the Americano and the Americano Bianca, are those going to always kind of be the main ones, or do you anticipate having another product that's sort of like in that main slot?
Yeah, so those are definitely a core piece of our product plan or product roadmap, but we would like to introduce some vermouth at some point. We're working on a ready to drink cocktail that we plan to launch this year. So yeah, there's a few other things, but what we will do is we'll always stick with Italian liqueur. That is my passion, and that's where I want us to focus. There's so much room in that category to kind of play around and introduce new products into the market that are tasty.
When are you holding out on talking more about the RTD?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, it's going to be a coffee amaro based RTD. So we're pretty excited about that. We're getting close on formulation. It's a lot trickier to formulate with coffee than I originally expected. So it's taken a bit of time. We've been working on it for over a year and a half. So we're excited to hopefully get that out in the summertime, if not fall.
That is exciting. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And I guess in general, are you more of a sipping Amaro neat, or what are your favorite cocktails to make with your products?
Oh my gosh, I'm the all the things. I love it all different ways. We like to say that we're drinking better, because a lot of the botanicals we use, while alcohol's not healthy, a lot of the botanicals we use are healthier. And there's no additives or preservatives in our product. And so I sip it neat. I sip it on the rocks. I make, some of the common cocktails are really the base ones, like Manhattans and Negronis and Spritzes and Spagliatos. And, you know, so some of those, but we experiment a lot with other fun stuff. Like with the Bianca, we'll put a, you know, half ounce of mezcal to 1.5 ounces of Bianca, and then put soda water in a grapefruit peel, and it's delicious.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
Summer super. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have recipes like on our website and on Instagram and on our newsletter. We always send out a recipe with our newsletter. So yeah.
And this is a good time for me to plug the fact that anybody listening to this can go to craftspiritsmag.com and also see the latest issue of Craft Spirits Magazine, which will have a couple of cocktails in there from you all as well. Yeah. I'm also curious now to just hear, you know, we've talked a lot about the past and the present, but what do you envision? What does Fast Penny Spirits look like 10 years down the line?
Well, Fast Penny Spirits will be available internationally 10 years down the line. It'll have a full product lineup, not a huge one, but a full product lineup. And we will have shown people how to extend Amaro into their daily lives and entertainment and, you know, that sort of thing. So we will have a line of RTDs. We'll have a good product line, and yeah, we'll be available in a lot more places.
Awesome. And kind of to close, I just kind of like to hear, what would your advice be to someone out there kind of in your shoes, you know, years ago when you were kind of first having that aha moment of like, I think I can do this.
Well, one piece of advice that I got early on was, if you're going in the alcohol business, get a lawyer really quickly. And I would highly recommend that, because there's so many conflicting laws and additional laws and regulations. I worked in consulting for over 20 years and worked with some highly regulated industries, and I don't know if any of them are more regulated than this one. Yeah. With many like conflicting regulations. So
lawyer up early.
Yes.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Jamie Hunt of Fast Penny Spirits. You can learn more about the company at fastpennyspirits.com. And in our show notes, you can also find a link to a story about Fast Penny from a recent issue of Craft Spirits magazine. And remember, if you make whiskey, visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org to register for the Heartland Whiskey Competition today. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers!